We're about to get regular, Sarah.
All up in here.
All up in here.
This is not unleaded. This is not unleaded.
Right.
Have you just accepted that you have a bias and people know that about you and that's fine?
Yes. Yes and yes. I've accepted it and I have come out of the proverbial conservative closet.
The Mock and Daisy Common Sense Cast.
No one has common sense anymore. Welcome, Sarah Carter, to the Chicks on the Right Mock and Daisy show. We're so happy, happy to have you here.
We are delighted.
We feel
finally very
unworthy of your presence.
No, not at all.
We totally do. We talked about you in our live and we were like, listen, she's all accomplished and crap. Why does she want to hang out with us? Seriously.
I do. I want to hang out with you because you are awesome and I feel like privileged to be invited into your internet kingdom. I feel like I live in this weird bubble in swampland and I hate it and I can't. I get so excited whenever I can wear like t-shirts and just be myself and like to hang out with people like me, just regular everyday Americans with everyday stuff going on. And
well,
none of this junk.
Yes.
We're about to get regular, Sarah.
All up in here.
This is not unleaded. This is not unleaded.
Right.
For those people who are listening to our podcast who may not be familiar with your incredible resume, why don't you just start by saying a little bit about yourself? I know you've got like an amazing background that just is, because you're like a legit journalist,
yeah,
which we are not.
I transformed, I morphed over the last year into investigative columnist. A lot of people don't remember the writer, right? It's always like you read a story in the newspaper, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened in Afghanistan or this happened in Iraq. A lot of times people don't pay attention to the writer. And I think that's great. I think that's totally okay. Because I really felt like there was a transformation like with journalism over the last years. And even though it's fun and it's cool, a lot of journalists have been more notable, aka Acosta, who accosts me all the time. No, I'm just
joking. His name.
His existence. It's just...
Right.
But I mean, became very popular and became like these, you know, celebrities, right? Instead of like reporting the news, it became more about me. Now that's me. No, I'm just, I'm just teasing. It's so many years of just covering journalism. So when I was much younger, I started working in California, a young journalist working at a local paper, the Daily Bulletin. I love the Daily Bulletin. I'm in Ontario, California. And it was exciting. I was a young journalist working Norco, the city of Norco, a little like cowboy town, right? With all kinds of interesting stories and local news and school meetings. And then eventually it became bigger stories in Norco about a factory. And from what I remember, you know, back then, there was a woman fighting this company who she believed it was crazy. Chemicals were leaking and people were getting sick. And so I jumped onto that story, started getting a little bit more adventurous with my stories and went from that to covering what we had was the worst crime spree in California. I mean, with gangs in Pomona, California, a lot of Latino gangs and local gangs, as well as, you know, underprivileged communities, Black gangs. I really wanted to cover those social issues. And we lost a police officer. An Irwindale cop was killed in front of the Pomona courthouse by a 15-year-old young man from one of our local high schools. And I decided to plunge right into that. And I befriended some of the kids. I stayed with them for more than 6 months, covered their story throughout. I'm still friends with actually the young girl in the story. Her name was Jamie Ruiz. She is now a lovely woman with 3 beautiful children and married, but she came from a really tough life. And I covered those stories. Those stories eventually took me from the streets and the drugs on the streets to the border, because I kept telling my editor, these kids are getting the drugs from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And they keep, you know, and when you hear about it on the streets, you hear like, it's coming from Mexico, it's coming across the border, there's a lot of contraband. And by the way, the children were always paying the price. They were the ones always getting arrested. They were the ones that grew up in a really disenfranchised community and a school system that really didn't pay attention to them. And a lot of times parents that were incapable of either paying attention to them or working so much that they really couldn't pay attention to them. So my editor was like a little nervous about sending me over to Mexico and to the US-Mexico border. And I said, look, I can do it. I can speak Spanish, right? I can say margarita.
That's all I need.
And it'll all be okay. So he said, okay, get out of here. You're making me nervous. Go to the border and start covering those stories, break some big stories. Because we had already won a number of awards for those series of stories that we did, Jamie's story. So I kind of set a little platform for me and I went to the border. I believed it was important. I had children. Even then, my children were young. And I thought, We need to do something for our kids. We need to expose this. And as a community, we're all a part of it. You know, it's easy to put people that live in disenfranchised communities and poverty and say, well, that's not where I live. That's not my, right. Those aren't my people. That's never going to happen to me or my kids. But guess what? It is happening to us and our children.
Right, right.
Addiction rates are soaring. Kids are dying. And what happens when a kid kills a police officer, right? What happens when a kid in a disenfranchised community ends up, you know, in a situation where they cross your children, you know, or something goes wrong? So I went to the border. I started breaking really big stories on the border, to make a long story short, because I felt like nobody was there. I was like, what's going on here? I'm at the U.S.-Mexico border. It's like wide open. I even found a tunnel in San Diego. I was there.
Oh, my God.
I went across the border, not illegally, but I tried one time, but they stopped me. So I had to go through, you know, Tijuana Pass, and went in there, found a group of men that were planning on running across the border. Some of them were criminals. I interviewed them. It's actually still online somewhere. Like, I found it. This was 2005 or 2006.
Okay.
So when I covered those stories, you know, along the U.S.-Mexico border, started breaking that, interviewed guys that were there, talked about, I actually broke one of the biggest stories in L.A. at the time, which was how many times the Mexican military had incurred on the U.S. border. And I stumbled across that, interviewed DEA. So that eventually led me to the cartels and this idea of this nexus of terrorism in South America and Mexico. Like, because I thought, well, if the drugs are coming through, what else can come through?
Right.
You know, we're not paying attention to that. Human trafficking, abuse of children. Because for me, this isn't, I'm not an anti-immigrant person. My mother was an immigrant. She came from Cuba. She came here legally in the 1960s. And it's tough. And I get it. I get how hard it is for so many families, right? I understand that. But we also can't perpetuate the behavior of the drug cartels and corruption and allow children to be abused and just use them, because the people are being used.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to get across. So after that, I started covering the whole U.S.-Mexico border. I did a trip across the whole thing, going in and out of Mexico, covering the drug cartels, covering Sinaloa, going into Nuevo Laredo, covering the Juarez cartel,
wow.
And started to expose all of that. And finally, Jerry Siefer, this is an inside fun story from the Washington Times. This is a great older reporter working at the Washington Times on immigration, started contacting me. And he would just call me up. It was so bizarre. He'd call me up and say, this is Jerry Siefer from the Washington Times. And he'd do it like really mad. And I was a young reporter. I'm like, whoa, what did I do? And he's like, just slow down and give an old guy a break. And I was like, no.
Oh my gosh.
He eventually hired me. He begged them to hire me at the Washington Times. And that's how I came to Washington, D.C.
Oh,
my
wow.
decision was, yeah, my decision to come here, though, was based on one factor, because I am a pain in the butt. And I said, I would love to come only if you hire me to be a war correspondent for the Pentagon. So if I can cover the war, I will come to Washington, D.C.
Oh, my gosh, Sarah.
And then you
embedded with the military, right?
Yeah. And then from then on, I had been covering the war from like 2007, end of 2007, all the way up, even after my husband was wounded. The last time I've been in the war zone was 2015 in Iraq, covering ISIS. So President Trump was like, holy cow, because I never thought, you know, after covering all of these stories that I would stumble on the whole Russia hoax thing. You know, I mean, I was covering the election because I was working at Sinclair, and it was actually because they needed me to cover it. Like, you know, they were like, hey, Sarah, why don't you come cover this a couple of days because we don't have someone there. And I started covering it. And then, of course, you know, Michael Flynn. I knew him when I covered the war. Mike Flynn was the head of intelligence in Afghanistan. I started seeing what was going on with the FBI, and I stumbled on all of that during my coverage, early coverage of the Trump presidency. And that's how everything kind of unfolded.
So how did you make the leap from that into what you call yourself now, which is more of a, what did you say, an investigative columnist?
Yes.
Because you clearly have a bias, as we do.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's baked right into our name. Right? It's like right in the cheeks on the right.
I mean,
It's like a cobbler, right?
Right there. Right there. Yeah.
So do you get flack for that? Or do you just, have you accepted that you have a bias and people know that about you and that's fine?
Yes. Yes and yes. I've accepted it. And I have come out of the proverbial conservative closet.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you why. I do have social issues that people would say, oh, she seems like more liberal on those issues. You know, I was a big advocate. I still am, you know, gay rights, especially with AIDS and everything that I had an uncle who practically raised me after my father died, and he died of AIDS, and I took care of him until the very end. So I saw what it did to our community. I saw what it did to our life. I have a deep faith in God. And I believe that because of my deep faith, that's why I spent so much time overseas. People would say, you know, it was so dangerous. Why did you do it? Why did you cover these stories? And I would say, you know, I would always ask myself, is it worth the risk? Is it worth the risk bringing this home? Like, is it going to make somebody's life better? Are they going to be more informed? I wouldn't do it just to do it. Don't get me wrong. I love the excitement, right, of covering those stories. And it's a bit of an addiction, but I would never take those risks with my family. We would talk about it. I would say, this is what I'm doing. These are the precautions I'm taking. And I believe this is worth it. And I would do that. So for me, that's important. But when I saw what was happening in our country over the last 4 years, you know, my husband fought overseas. I covered the war overseas. And, you know, we risk our lives when we do that. My husband lost his eyesight in Afghanistan, you know, fighting terrorism and fighting mostly for our nation and for our Constitution. And when I saw, you know, what was happening here and that people within our own government, people that I used to respect, that I thought I respected, were just trampling all over it because they believed and they hated this man, President right. Donald Trump, or this God. Citizen Donald Trump, I didn't understand it. Because I'm like, I didn't hang out with the Trumps. I'm not like a Trump person. Like, I don't know if somebody thinks that out there, but I'm not. I mean, I wasn't like in New York partying with the Trumps. I mean, right. That would have been fun. I was like just lucky to get back from Afghanistan and then have to deal with children and laundry and a house and crazy dogs. And, you know, my whole life is just different. But then I thought to myself, I can't keep that in any longer. It just yeah. came out. And it slowly started coming out of me because I couldn't tell the whole story without telling the whole story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So do you worry about censorship now? Because we're seeing it. It's so rampant.
Yeah. Like, it's all over the place. Yeah. Because I was going to ask if you were worried about it, but I don't even know if I was going to use the word worry as much as like just like disgust by it. Right.
Right, Daisy. And I agree with you too, Mark, on that, because like I feel like I'm not only disgusted and worried, I'm actually very frightened in a weird way. I have yeah. faith that we're going to get out of this, right? That's why I wear my shirt, Faith Without Fear. But there is fear. I mean, I can't say I'm not. What I'm afraid of is losing our Constitution. I'm not afraid for me. I'm also afraid, or let's say I'm also concerned that the FBI and our intelligence community, and in lieu with big tech, have the capabilities to just spy on whoever they want,
right.
whenever they want. And right. they can look up any excuses to do that. And we saw that. We saw that. I'm not making that up. That's not a joke.
No,
it's very serious because Carter Page is an example of somebody who was spied on and whose FISA warrant was falsified. There was a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant, which you have to spy on an American. You cannot just pick up, I'm going to listen to what Mock and Daisy are saying. Oh, shit, look what Sarah Carter's saying.
Right, right.
She's mad at us because we're whatever.
And on top of that, I think there's a lot, and not, listen, we are not journalists. You are a journalist. That's your trade. But I have seen such a pivot just over the past 4 to 6 years by journalists. And I feel like they're in bed with all those people that you just described. And there is such, to me, such culpability on the part of our media. I'm not talking about just social media. I'm talking about our media. Because it's almost as if they get like a script like every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
The words change. Like, because we notice it because we have to notice it. You know, like right. we become so much more aware of it. And so we pay a lot of attention because, you know, we were on the radio together. We do the podcast together. We're in this business, right? And you start picking up on the cues. You start watching the talking heads on TV and in radio and stuff like that. And the liberals, right? The liberals who they start using, but all of them start using the same buzzwords at the same time. Like, it's like they almost get handed like a script and you're like, who's handing him the script like for the next 6 weeks, for this 8 weeks. And it's almost as if they're all in bed together and they have this giant script where they're like, okay, everybody ready, go. And they all, it's just, it's so weird.
We got to talk about AMEC for a second, because if you are like the millions of frustrated Americans looking for an alternative to the other senior benefits group and you want to support an organization that takes responsible action, then now is the time to join our friends at AMEC. AMEC, or the Association of Mature American Citizens, Citizens is the fastest growing conservative senior organization in America. They believe in the values that have made America great: faith, family, and freedom. AMAC offers an alternative to just about every benefit that AARP offers, but without the liberal agenda.
AMAC stands up for the Constitution, and they fight with a full-time presence in Washington, D.C., calling on members of Congress and the administration to discuss issues and support or oppose legislative actions on behalf of the membership. Issues like healthcare reform, Social Security, reducing prescription drug costs, and more. We stand with AMAC, and we hope you will too. Stand with us today and join at amac.us/chicks. That's amac.us/chicks. The benefits of a membership are great, but the cause is even greater. Join today at amac.us/chicks. And it's crazy because it's like they're all working together. And that also frightens me because I have friends who, you know, even 4 years ago were somewhat, they're pretty conservative. And they've started to lean liberal because they've been taken in. They've been transformed by the messaging, by the narrative that's been pushed to them. And
it comes from all angles.
It's everywhere.
It comes from education. It comes from the media. It comes from
Hollywood.
That's it. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And yet we're the ones that are brainwashed.
Yeah.
What?
Right. No, we're ostracized. What's happened is, and you're right, that's what's been happening. It's been the school systems and then the media. And, you know, because people leave the universities and everybody's kind of like a clique, right? Over decades, people have hired their friends and the people with the same mindset and the same. And you see that in New York. You see that at the New York Times. You see that at, you know, the Washington Post now, and all of these major media outlets that we actually as a society put a lot of faith in, right? Because they're supposed to be the balance. They're supposed to be the check, and even our local papers, the check on our government. They're supposed to be the watchdog. They're supposed to be the voice of the voiceless, and they're not anymore. They're the voice for the government. This is what really made me actually come out and become more of a columnist than a journalist.
Right.
Was when I would hear John Brennan and James Comey talk about the president, like especially Brennan, who's a former head of the CIA, who I've interviewed, who I know, would call President Trump, you know, a clear and present danger. And then Comey and others would come out and say, well, anybody, any American, and we've heard this over and over again, who supported Trump or who's a conservative, the way that they play it and push it is like some kind of anti-American weird magite that we have to out, we have to deprogram. What kind of talk is this? It's like the craziest fascist talk. But I could see that happening years ago. Yeah. And I would say to people, you know, this is just the beginning because this is how it starts, right? And we ignore it. Dennis Prager wrote this column that I put on my website. I republished with his permission. It was called The Good German. Now I know The Good German. It's like being quiet in a time when the government, you know, is doing these things and not speaking out. You know, why are people so quiet? And we can't be. And it's scary for us. I'm sure for you too. Mm-hmm. You know, you're every time you're like probably worried about what you're saying on, you don't want to lose your show. You don't want to, you know, to be, but you want to state your opinion.
Right.
Yeah. We're like living under a totally different set of rules. This is not America.
And I get scared for young people because we get messages all the time from college students. There are lots of college students who, especially the ones who just go to college, who, you know, newly fresh, young college students who will write us and be like, I'm a conservative on a college campus, and I will never say that I'm conservative because I'm scared to do that. We used to get messages all the time, and that would break our hearts because we would be like, they are silenced on college campuses because they can't say that they're conservative. What is that? I mean, it's like those universities are supposed to be where you're supposed to have open, free thought, right? It used to be that that was the case when I was in college, when you were in college, when we all were in college. Right? It used to be that that was where it was like, woo, open free thought, everybody.
Right.
And now you cannot go against the groupthink. If you go against the groupthink, you are ostracized. You are, and it starts there. And so then it's almost as if they're pushed into submission and then they get out and then they learn all this garbage from their university professors who are all liberal. And then they get out and then they come home and parents a lot of times don't even recognize these kids because they turn into these liberal groupthinkers and they're like, who is this kid? I don't recognize this kid.
No, but you're right about it. And it's ostracizing, but it's like public bullying, right?
Right.
Public bullying. So we've all made a choice to come forward and to say how we feel about our lives.
Right.
But if you come forward and you're talking about your faith in God or your love for family, or you say, you know what, I don't agree with this group because this is what they stand for, all of a sudden I call it liberal bullying, right?
Yeah.
The liberals always try to say like, oh, we don't like bullies. No, they do it all the time.
Yeah.
And what's worse now is they're actually dehumanizing people.
Yeah.
And that is very dangerous. Look, I never would tell someone to stop talking. I'm not afraid of their thought process.
Right.
If somebody's a liberal, if somebody's somebody who I disagree with, even if I absolutely oppose it, I believe that people have a right to speak up. Right. As long as it doesn't incite. Right. We always know about harmful words. Right. We're not going to just go out and, you know, commit defamation to people. We can talk about our ideas and thoughts. I have never once said that group should just be. I don't ever want to hear from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. OK, I can't. What she says, I'm like, wow, I totally disagree with you on almost everything in your life. But you have a right to talk about it.
Right. And I would rather know what these other people are thinking and feeling and saying.
What is President Trump's reaction to big tech censorship, and what can he do about it? This is Sarah Carter. Rudy Giuliani joins me to explain why taking away free speech in America is really taking away America. Find the Sarah Carter Show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, and I think it sets such a bad precedent, all of the censorship and all the takedowns from social media. It ends up that people feel more rage and more of a need to hide and go underground, where things get really wild and really bad.
Because they start
bubbling.
And
nobody wants that.
They start
bubbling. And that's where we're going.
Yeah. I will say, though, you said something that struck a chord with me, Sarah. And that is, because, you know, it's a strength thing. I think that there are a lot of people who are strong enough to be able to, there are people who are strong enough who you can say, it's kind of like having faith, because I have faith too. And I have no problem saying to somebody, I believe in Jesus Christ, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I have faith.
Right.
And so I have no problem saying that out loud. And if somebody has a problem with it, well, they can go bugger off, you know? And so that's just how I feel about that. Some people have that strength and they have no problem saying that. And there are other people who are weak, and there are a lot of weak people. There are a lot of weak people. And that's okay. It's just that when you're in the situation that we're in right now, the problem is that, and I think historically, especially with the Republican Party, we've been very polite. There are a lot of very polite people on our side of the aisle. And so you combine weakness with politeness.
But also it's fear, though, too.
And fear.
Because people now legitimately have a reason to be afraid to
share
their
views. Right, because they're going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose their livelihoods. They're going to lose money. They're going to be able to lose the ability to pay to put food on the table. I mean, those people are legitimately afraid, and I get that. But you combine all those things, and people are less apt to say, you know, I'm a conservative, or I believe this, or they're just going to stay quiet. And so they have been bullied into submission, which sucks. I mean, it totally sucks. And
it sucks does.
Because it's a terrible example for our children, too, because our children, a lot of these young people are seeing, oh, my gosh,
so
you know, I guess I have to be a liberal, because you know what? It's the easier way to live. It's the easiest way out. It's like I'm just going to be a liberal because it's cool. The celebrities are liberals. You know, that's the cool people are liberals. Why would
I? Did you see those conservative girls?
Right.
They're like at the end of the lunchroom. We're like sitting at the end of the lunchroom eating our Nutella.
Exactly.
I don't know why I thought Nutella. I don't know why. Nutella just seems like something that like an unpopular girl would be eating at the end.
Oh,
like
my God. That would be me.
I love Nutella. Me too.
I put that crap on everything, Sarah.
Me too. It's like, it's crazy. I would like just automatically swipe it on my hips if I could. So that's where it's going.
That's where it absolutely goes.
Cut out the middleman.
Yeah, cut out the middleman right there.
Where it goes. Totally. We're like the counterculture now. We're kind of uncool.
Yeah, we're like the girls with the armpit hair in the 70s, right?
Try explaining that to your teenage daughter that, like, conservatism is totally cool.
Right. We're like the 70s with the armpit hair. We're like, people are behind us, right?
Right.
We're not catching up yet to our coolness.
Right. We need to somehow make it cool again. We need, like, remember when counterculture, like, alternative, like, punk rock was kind of cool? Like,
right.
We need to somehow make.
Like, Doc Martens. Like, we got to start wearing. Like Doc Martens and like doing some crazy stuff with our hair. I don't know.
We need to all get mohawks, Sarah.
Yeah. We're like a think tank.
And then we could be like, like, you guys can totally sit with us.
You can totally sit with us.
And we'll open up our lunch counter and be like one of those ABC after school specials. You can come sit with us.
Totally.
Well, Sarah, we could, I mean, we could talk to you obviously for like 5 straight hours.
Totally.
Yeah, me too. I can hang out with you guys. We've got to do this. We've got to do this.
In case this is the first time they're hearing you, you have a website, you have a podcast. Tell all the places that people can find you.
Well, you can listen to my podcast. It's The Sarah Carter Show. I love it. Always have great guests on there. Some really fun guests like UFOologists. No.
I got to listen to that. Listen.
Well, you've got to listen to Lou Elizondo because he's actually from the Pentagon. So it's very straight and it's awesome. He gets like a lot of hits every time I have him on. You guys got to get him on your show.
And my husband would love that too.
Yes. Yeah, you guys got to get him on. And I have congressional members and of course newsmakers. And I try to talk about, you know, our daily lives and where we're going. Similar to you, just news of the day. But you can go to sarahcarter.com too, which is my website. We have all the latest stories. And follow me. Gosh, I wish I could say follow me on Parler.
I know.
Listen, I have every faith that Parler will be back soon in full force.
Yes. I do too. I do too. I love my friend Dan Bongino. You know, he's been through so much and I just have so much faith in him and praying for him every day.
Yes.
He's going through a lot. But yeah, we'll all be back up on Parler. I'm not even worried.
Totally agree.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us. We really appreciate it.
You've been a delight. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you guys. It's great being with you.
Thank you.
Bye, Sarah. Bye.
Was she not the greatest guest ever? I feel like we could talk to her for like 12 straight hours.
I love her. We are BFFs now. Like, seriously, we don't have a lot of other BFFs, so we need to like get one into that. We need to get another BFF so we can have just like a third BFF every so often, just in case you're sick. I need
about.
A stand-in BFF just in case you get COVID again. So Sarah's a good stand-in. All right,
Sarah is a great stand-in.
Sarah, smile.
We got so many nice reviews this week.
Did we?
Yes.
It's I so love nice reviews.
Oh my
Read
God.
One. Go.
It's the greatest. Okay. So Aaliyah Renee said, love these ladies. In the midst of so much insanity, Mock and Daisy have helped me stay sane. I adore them and appreciate all their hard work to bring us the common sense and truth. Thank you. Keep up the awesome work. See you in the reprogramming camps. Woohoo.
Oh my God. I hope that they have chocolate and beer in the reprogramming
camps. For real.
Camps. Listen, if they have beer and chocolate, I think we're going to be fine because we're going to have all the cool people that are there.
And Nutella.
Oh, that's right.
They
Nutella,
have the
too.
Nutella.
And Sarah Smile. We'll have her, too. Okay, what else?
Freethinker Stuck in Cali says, you chicks rock. I'm going to be real honest. I haven't been able to jump on the podcast bandwagon until now. You ladies keep it real. Oh, and can you please make shirts that say hashtag unwoke? I love it.
Oh, I love that, too. That's actually
that's
a really...
to add.
Yeah.
Robin Larshi, I think is how you say it, says, love your show. You two are awesome. So many good ones. Oh, my God.
So many good ones. All right. So here are all the places that you guys can find us. Our website is the first and foremost place that you should go every day. You should bookmark it and have it as, like, the background on your computer. It's www.chicksonright.com. You should go and you should subscribe. So you can go to the top of that website. It's on the right-hand corner. There are happy little cartoon faces. You can click on that and subscribe to this podcast and then tell all your friends about it. And they should subscribe to it, too, because that's
and
all
leave reviews.
And then, yeah, leave a review for us. And then we're on all the places like Twitter at Chicks on Right until we get shut down. Instagram at Chicks on Right. We are on Parler. We are on all until the like when they decide to bring that up again. We're on all those places, like all the MeWe's and all those places. We're at Chicks on Right. You can find us at Chicks on Right in all those places.
We're and on Rumble, some, too.
And
we're on Rumble.
Oh, yeah. We're on Rumble, you guys.
We're on Rumble.
Yeah,
I post our video there every single day.
We're on YouTube.
The Mock and Daisy Show.
The Mock and Daisy Show is on YouTube. And so, actually, if you go to Facebook, we're at Chicks on the Right on Facebook. We do a morning show every single day, usually around 7 a.m. Eastern. We're there Monday through Friday. And then that gets pushed out to YouTube, and it gets pushed out to Radio America, and they podcast that every day. If you miss it, you can catch us on Radio America. We're all fine podcasts are played.
Are there.
Sir, yeah.
And the most exciting new place that we are is that we have a special private Facebook group just for our most dearest and faithful following.
Right.
It's called the Chicks on the Right Insiders Group.
Right.
And you can join it. It has a very small subscription fee of $4.99 per month. Mm-hmm. And in that, you'll get exclusive videos that nobody else will see unless they are in that group. And we're building a nice little community there.
That's right.
Of just the best people ever. I love everybody in there. It's amazing.
And when we say exclusive video, it's not mock taking your top off.
I know. Rob was asking me that earlier. He was like, I'll sign up if it's going to, if there are nudes.
I know. That's right.
There's no nudes.
Of course. It's like the first thing I figured that he would ask. And other people will too. And we're not going to take our tops off.
No tops are off.
No tops are going to be taken off.
But there is some other exclusive stuff that's just for that group.
Really fun
stuff.
And
lots of great discussion amongst the people that are in that group who are just the salt of the earth.
And you know what? No trolls.
And you can get to it by going to our main Facebook page, Chicks on the Right. And then if you're on a desktop, it's a lot easier than if you're on a phone. But like right under our cover photo, it says become a supporter or visit the supporter hub or something like that.
It's very cool. So you guys check that out. And we will be back here same chick time, same chick channel. Have a great week. Bye, everybody.
Democrats win the Senate, violence on Capitol Hill, Trump impeached again, and it's only January. This is Greg Corumbus. Join Jim Garrity and me for the Three Martini Lunch podcast each weekday, and we'll try to make sense of the political insanity and get in some laughs. Get the Three Martini Lunch at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.